back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore positive. We are positively down here at Fadley's. I'm waiting for the crab cakes. I don't smell them yet. Don Mueller here, former Baltimore County Executive. Segment two with Mayor Candidate Mary Miller. And Damey just came in. You want to break news that we're not allowed
to
break.
We're going to have some big news.
We're going to have some fun a little later on when Bill gets here. And but there was a story about Fadley's that you began to tell that I want you to tell to our audience. Because it really does. When we left the last segment, we were talking about Lexington Market and remodeling and iconic, awesome Baltimore things like the Fadley's crab cake, right?
Yeah. So everyone loves Fadley's crab cakes. My older son spent some time in college living on a very remote ranch in California, 5 hours from Las Vegas, 5 hours from L.A. For his birthday, his one request was, I need a crab cake. But there were 60 people living on the ranch. And so I came down to Fadley's and said, could you ship 60 crab cakes to this place in California? And they said, we'll do it.
They said, of course we can.
And they did it. And I was so impressed.
Well, you know. Now you got to be careful because we learned a lot about crab meat down here. They only serve Maryland crab meat here, right? So Oprah once called them and said, I need you to do this, that. And Bill had to say, We're not going to bring you foreign.
It's the wrong
crabs.
Time of the year.
We're not bringing crabs from Florida. It's the wrong time of the year. So you came in the right time of the year.
Right.
Well, it was a feat of dry ice and modern transportation, but we got it done.
How did they taste?
They were fabulous, and it was the talk of the ranch for weeks.
We hear that story over and over. We had Congressman John Sarbanes was down here, and he was telling us when his brother-in-law comes to town, before he goes to their house, he tells him, I'm going to be a little late because I have to go by Fadley.
Almost every time we've been here, a lot of times we come earlier in the day, but if we're here during lunch, we will be today, someone will walk in that door with their luggage. They're coming right from the airport.
No, I've seen it.
Like that happens.
I've seen it.
That happens here.
Yeah.
For you with the city, and we skirted around crime a little bit. I mean, this is, I guess, your television ads, everybody's ads. This is my hot button being, my hot button is land, tax, businesses, all I can't sell my condo. Yeah. I live at the harbor, all of that. But under all of that, for every citizen here, crime is the first thing, sadly, that comes to mind when I get off a plane with a Baltimore Positive hat or a Baltimore Positive shirt. Yeah. They tell me in Miami a couple weeks ago, oh, you live in Baltimore. I'm thinking, you're in Miami. You're like the, you know, that there's a reputation that goes with that. I don't like the reputation that we've developed, and I'm here to change it. I know you are as well.
Mm-hmm. No one likes that reputation, and it is the number one issue facing Baltimore right now. And I think we need a mayor who's going to be accountable, who's going to take charge here and say, let's get behind the police commissioner that we brought to Baltimore. We don't need more turnover at the top in the police department, and let's run the plan. I'd say to you, we need a new quarterback. We need someone who's going to come in, lead the team, run the plays, and let's get this done. I mean, this is not rocket science in my mind. I look back at many things that have been tried in Baltimore, many of which have worked, and we seem to let them fizzle. I think we need to go back to some of the proven strategies that have worked here before, bring in all the elements of community policing that we need to develop to rebuild trust in the police force in Baltimore, and put that together. I know we're trying to repair this airplane in the air. We're trying to reduce violent crime at the same time we're trying to restore trust in policing. And I know that is hard. And I think that a leader really gets everyone to the table, listens to their issues, their competing views, and gets them to agree on a plan, and then measures that relentlessly. We have just got to make progress here. People are so discouraged and frustrated. And I think it does come down to leadership. I'd like to give Commissioner Harrison more air cover to succeed, and I think give him the resources he needs. I know we have a huge human capital problem in the police department, and I think that is a measure of our position, our image, our view of Baltimore. This is a tough job. We can't succeed if we pay our officers less than surrounding jurisdictions, if we don't put a big emphasis on officer retention. We're losing too many officers who are retiring early. And I think building that pipeline more effectively to get people in the queue to become sworn officers. we've talked about the fact that we have more sworn officers in desk jobs and administrative roles. Let's move them back onto the street. Let's give them the training to get them ready to do that. But I think, you know, providing the help and the oversight to say, how can I help you succeed in this job? That's what I would do.
Well, it's interesting. I think, and they'll call or text me if I'm incorrect. You, while other candidates in the race, they have a variety of crime plans. I was struck by you're the most outspoken in terms of identifying this turnover in police chiefs as an issue.
Yeah, it's a huge issue.
Well, you're out in front of Police Commissioner Harrison. He was here,
right?
We had Martin O'Malley here a couple of weeks ago. So we talk about the things that used to happen and where we are now at various points of success. There's a track record. And there's a measurement.
And we talked about when Commissioner Harrison was here and when former Governor and Mayor O'Malley was here, that we used to get questions a lot in Baltimore County about the consistent approach to public safety. And I think now, even with the new police chief in Baltimore County, Melissa Hyatt, even with a brand new police chief, when you look back over the past 30 years, the county basically had three chiefs. In that time, I heard Jane Miller one day do it off the top of her head, which only Jane can do it like that. She listed every one, and we had to be up to 14 or 15 chiefs in Baltimore City. So it would be like, what's the sports analogy, Nestor? Is it
the Cleveland Browns?
Right. The Cleveland Browns. Nestor would
beat on Cleveland. We're Baltimore.
You just as you said, the lack of continuity, going in a new, steering the ship in a new way every time, or school superintendents. That's why I was so pleased the other day.
I know you have
an education plan. We'll get to that. That'll probably be the focus of the third segment. But I was pleased to see that the board in the city reappointed Dr. Sanalise, because let's not keep changing ships. What are the key components, Mary? What differentiates your crime plan? Because I heard a couple of things. I heard community. I don't know that you used this word, but it was implied, and certainly the commissioner used it and the governor, that whole idea of constitutional policing. Yeah. So I hear you talking about community, constitutional policing. I don't think there's a more complex issue out there. So
we haven't said the words consent decree in this conversation.
What are the key? We're going to give you some time now to talk about what are the key components of Mary Miller's crime plan.
So I've already mentioned the first one, which is I think we need to get behind a single plan and the police commissioner and give him the resources that he needs. But at the same time, the consent decree is a blueprint for changing the way police interact with community. And it has a very prescribed list of things that the commissioner has to deliver. I would like to establish a timetable for getting that done. Some cities have let it go on for decades. We can't do that here. I think we have an urgent need to rebuild trust. And so things like the PC put out last year on use of force and how and when that can occur in a police encounter, that's a piece of it. And there's a list of these steps. I think that getting that done is absolutely critical. And I would like to ask, you know, where do you need help? What can we work on? How can we deploy this so that we have the resources in place that we can say we've achieved these goals? I look at programs like Safe Streets. I look at programs like ROCA. I think there's a huge need for diversionary tactics that are going to get to youth earlier and find the individuals most at risk for committing crimes and give them the help and services they need to stop that. And I think that's part of the whole program. You know, I was looking at another document, President Obama's 21st Century Policing Task Force put out. It contains a lot of the elements that are in our consent decree. And I think, you know, it's our obligation to do those things.
Give us some highlights from that plan that you were looking at.
There's just one that sort of stood out to me, which I don't see anywhere in the Baltimore plans. And it's a small thing, but it says, you know, make sure that you recognize good encounters with the police as you're talking about policing in Baltimore. I was driving through East Baltimore the other day, and I saw a police officer playing basketball with some kids. And I thought, you know, we talk about are the wrongs, and they are serious and deep and structural, and we need to get at those things, but at the same time, we should start reporting out where we're seeing progress and where we're seeing things getting rebuilt.
Well, the Squeegee Boys get the news, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we did a whole episode. It's interesting that you mentioned it. We did an entire episode around the holidays. And again, I hope you go back and check it out on Shop with a Cop. Now, it sounds simple,
but
you get a bunch of kids and give them an opportunity to spend a morning with a police officer to get a different view. I mean, all of our hearts sank over the past couple of weeks. We had someone walk into New York police stations and try to assassinate police officers there.
Yeah.
Just yesterday, my heart sank both for the mayor, for County Executive Ushefsky.
Sure.
I turn on the news and I said to my wife, they had this picture of the county executive walking up these steps. At Choctaw, I know that walk all too well. I made it with Jim Smith. I made it with Kevin Kamenetz. Yeah. I made it with myself. It's the worst day to be a mayor or a county executive.
Yeah.
It can't go on.
Yeah.
It can't go on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's guns, right? That's the next thing about guns.
So let's turn to you and say, what do we do to get the guns off the street? Yeah. People are going to turn to you and say, all right, Mayor, how do we get these guns off the street?
Yeah. I think we're going to have to ask for more help from the federal agencies on this project, and I think, you know, the state. I think Baltimore cannot do this alone. Maryland, I think, has some strong gun protection laws. We're surrounded by states that do not. And so the guns coming into Baltimore are a huge problem. And I think that should be a focus of how can we get guns off the street, and how can we bring in our other federal partners to help us do that. I think we can leverage that more. And I think that's what we need to do.
Well, one of the things that's come up repeatedly in here, we had Matt Gallagher on earlier, who was the architect of State Stat.
Yeah.
We had Governor O'Malley on here talking about his book, Smarter Government. And we say to everybody, whether you're Democrat, Republican, or independent, whether you thought the governor did a great job or not a great job, the book is compelling because it lays out, particularly in the area of using data. Now, my guess is, as someone who spent all those years on the financial side, somebody who went to run President Obama's program to rebuild this economy, what part is data going to play in a Miller administration?
Well, data is huge, and I think it's fashionable to say everything should be data-driven, evidence-driven, et cetera. But the fact is that CompStat was 1990s technology, and we need to bring that forward. And I think getting back to the consent decree, I think there's probably community data that needs to be in the system along with policing data to try to get the best modern system to provide the best policing, to put our resources where the highest incidence, the most trouble is. No one disagrees with that. You know, 33% of the crimes occur in 5% of the geography of Baltimore. So let's focus on that. But that system needs investment. And I would ask the private sector for help here. We have some of the best cybersecurity firms in the country in the Baltimore area. We have huge technology resources. I remember in the 1980s and 90s where we would turn to the private sector and say, give us some help here. You know, give us some resources. Volunteer your best people. Let's fix this quickly so we can get to the destination faster.
I always think we're a city that built Harbor Place, got Camden Yards built, attracted a football team, and I talk all the time about the baseball team and 80 nights downtown and what that represents. I often think, like, if we had to do that all over again, would we have the ability to wherewithal to build a Harbor Place, to bring an aquarium, to retain an Under Armour, you know, once you get the incubator of that kind of growth. For the city itself, and I guess the reputation of the city for crime and all that goes along with it, I'm of the mindset now we have to save each other, right? I don't think someone from Silicon Valley is going to come and say, we're going to invest our new cybersecurity program in Baltimore, right? This is going to have to be birthed out of here and retained here.
Yeah.
And these local businesses, your former headquarters down the street, these are the anchors. And to your point, that's probably, I don't know a lot, but I think that's probably what got all that done in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
Certainly it's what attracted the football and baseball team.
And look at the, Mary, I hear you talk about cyber. Look at the great work, and again, we had him on as a guest, but look at the great things that are beginning to happen over at Port Covington and Mark Weller and Weller Development and Sagamore. I mean, Mark is and his folks are absolutely convinced that if it's not already, Baltimore is about to become the cyber hub of the United States of America. So what I hear you saying is, It's right here, guys.
Let's make that happen. There's so much potential in this city. We focus on crime and the negatives, but think about what we have here in terms of the educational institutions, the healthcare system, the companies that are here that have so much heart for Baltimore. And I think we just need to give them the confidence again that will allow us to do big things. I mean, to do those visionary projects like bringing, you know, the stadiums to Baltimore, new stadiums, iconic stadiums, bringing, you know, Harbor Place to life. It's not a failure of imagination here. It is a failure of execution. I just don't see happening. That we're not thinking big enough, and we don't send that message of confidence. Come here. This is what we want you to do.
When I birthed this thing a year and a half ago, it was football season a year and a half ago. I flew to Charlotte, Nashville, Indianapolis, Cleveland. Not places that 30 years ago any of us would have said, oh, I want to go move there. Certainly not Indianapolis. They're all places where I've gone for most of my adult life, for 30 years, and I've seen them markedly get better, improve. And I wonder when it's our turn, who's going to be our leader, and where it's going to come from. But I've seen it. I've seen it in Detroit, right, which 20 years ago was in rough shape. Even Miami, I was there for a week. Atlanta, I was at the Super Bowl last year. These are all places where there is investment and there's a reputation that's emerging. We need to be the great turnaround story. Do you see any of those other models or take anything from other cities? Because I think that's what we need to do.
So I was very involved in Detroit when I was at the Treasury. They filed for bankruptcy. They literally hit rock bottom. They elected a new mayor. Mike Dugan is running Detroit. He's been reelected. I think he's doing a fabulous job of driving the agenda in Detroit. And that is a city with deeper problems than Baltimore, and they are really, you know, coming back. So I think, again, it comes back to leadership. And we can talk about crime, but I think Baltimore has just as big a problem with opportunity in this city. And unless we really begin to attack the structural racism and the disinvestment in communities and people that are here, I don't think we can really solve the crime problem because we're not giving people in Baltimore enough opportunity. And that's a complex issue of investments in education, investment in workforce training, investment in housing. But these are solvable problems. Baltimore has bumped along at the bottom of large cities over this last 10-year economic expansion. We have not participated the way we should. Yes, we've had modest growth, but we should be going gangbusters. And it's during those periods of expansion that you can really lift people up. And we haven't done that. That's what I think we need to do as a city. And keep people in the city. We lose too many residents who work by day in Baltimore and then go home to the suburbs, giving that entity their income tax revenue, their property tax revenue. I really want to promote living and working in Baltimore.
And when you say that, it's interesting. It's a great time to promote the census. The census about to begin. Critically important for the city of Baltimore. Mm-hmm. I mean, millions and millions of dollars at stake. So we need to say to folks, please don't blow off the census. Get involved. We're sitting with mayoral candidate Mary Miller. Mary, where do people go find out about your campaign? Where do they go on the web? What is it?
So if you go to www.electmarymiller.com.
Electmarymiller.com.
I'm going to go there right now. I haven't been to the mobile site.
Check it out, electmarymiller.com. Tell folks, they're sitting out there and they go, boy, it's the first I've heard of Mary. Interesting. I want to learn more. Tell us about where... We have this theory that where you grew up and how you were raised and what your teachers did all matter. Where do we go? ElectMaryMiller.com. You want to learn more about Mary? Where is it, Nestor?
Oh, it's ElectMaryMiller.com.
Oh, there you go. ElectMaryMiller.com. Tell folks a little bit about where you grew up, what your childhood was like, and how it formed. You go from wherever you grew up to sitting at the right hand of President Obama. Not all of us do that. So walk us through that.
Sure. So I grew up in a small town in upstate New York. I was one of six children. Both of my parents worked. We were not a family of affluence, of modest means. But I had a very stable, strong family growing up. And, you know, I went to work in high school. My first job was at a supermarket. And then I worked in the deli. I told someone the other day I was a member of the Amalgamated Meat Cutters Union in high school. I worked at a donut shop. I worked at a pharmacy. Those jobs were really good for me to learn about the exercise of work, the kinds of people I worked with, and the importance of, you know, work as a discipline. I went to college. I have a graduate degree in city and regional planning. I've always been interested in cities. I spent 4 years at the Urban Institute in Washington working on urban policy and particularly on urban finance. And then I answered an ad in the Wall Street Journal in 1983. A small company in Baltimore was looking for a municipal bond analyst. And I came to...
That sounds like an exciting appointment. Yeah.
Excited me.
Very important to those of us who had to sell those municipal bonds along the way.
I did not apply for that job.
Very, very important, Esther. If you ever in public life, you will learn why that job is very important.
So the company was T. Rowe Price. They were a private company. I came in at a time when they were ramping up a municipal bond department. I became the analyst for the city of Baltimore, ended up running the municipal bond department, and something important called the Maryland Bond Fund, which is the largest investor in capital projects across the state. And we invested in virtually every capital project in Baltimore, whether it was the city's general obligation bond projects, water and sewer, every tax-exempt hospital in the city, the stadium projects. It gave me such a window into Baltimore and what was growing here and where the investments were happening. So I stayed at T. Rowe Price. I rose through the ranks and became the first woman on the management committee there.
What did that feel like in that boardroom?
You can see me. I'm kind of a small person, but you know, it was a big deal. It was a big deal.
Absolutely.
When did that happen? How long had you been there before?
I think I went on the management committee in 2004.
So you've been there 2 decades.
How were you treated? I mean, I think this is fascinating, and those of us with wives and daughters, and we forget what it was like in the past and the obstacles in the way of women. What was it like when you walked into that boardroom? What was the culture at T. Rowe suddenly having a woman in that boardroom?
It was a great feeling, and I would say that was a company that gave me every opportunity. I mean, what I did was pretty measurable. I was running mutual funds. I was running investment portfolios. I got my report card every day. You know,
right.
How are you doing? And I do say that to young people today when they ask for advice. I say, do measurable things, because no one can argue with the facts.
Oh, you know, yeah, they can. I saw Congress.
This sort of happens every day, doesn't it?
I used to believe that.
Okay. Well, I will just say that T. Rowe Price was a wonderful employer for me. They gave me opportunities at a time when women were not rising through the ranks in a financial company. But I loved the business. I loved what I was doing. And I loved managing the people. And I ended up running a very large organization there. I thought I would stay there till they put me out to pasture. But life takes interesting turns. In 2008, we had the financial crisis. I managed through that at T. Rowe Price. It was one of the most challenging periods.
We were really on the brink, right?
We were on the brink. We were absolutely on the brink.
And let me guess, at that point, you weren't thinking, I'm going to run for mayor in 12 years. Like that, I mean, that was like the last thing on your mind.
That was not on my mind at that moment.
You had never considered running for mayor at that point, right?
Well, I was always interested in Baltimore's leadership and success,
obviously.
But I hadn't thought about myself in a political context. But the next year, I got a call from the Obama administration, and they said, would you take a job helping us at the Treasury? And I thought, this opportunity will not come along again. I'm so excited about this president, and you know, here's my chance to contribute to the country. So I went to work, and that was a around-the-clock job. I can tell
Does that feel a little something like not having served in the military and wanting to serve, right?
Yes. I mean, public service, in my mind, is one of the highest callings we have in this country. And I believe it is a privilege, not a right. I was so honored to have that opportunity. Again, I rose at the Treasury. I took a higher-level job. After 2 years, I became the Undersecretary for Domestic Finance, overseeing the whole U.S. economy. And we were fighting to bring this country back from this recession. We were pumping, you know, money into the economy to make sure that we didn't slip backwards. And sometimes that was very difficult. And sometimes you had adversaries who thought you were doing the wrong thing. I look back on that time and I think we saved this country from falling off the brink. We brought it back. And we did it in a way that was very conscious of the impact on people. And it was just an extraordinary experience. It was very hard. Often I had to bring together, you know, Republicans and Democrats and people with very competing views, kind of knock some heads together, get them in the same room and say, let's agree. What is our objective here? What are we trying to accomplish? And let's find that path. And that's the sort of experience that I think helps you ready yourself for a job like a mayor, because you're going to have those situations all the time. But I came out of the Obama administration really inspired by public service and how a government can serve its people and how a government like the city of Baltimore should serve its people. And when I go around and talk to people, they want their city government to serve them in small ways and big ways. They want the trash collected. They want illegal dumping stopped. They want their water bills delivered accurately and fairly across the city. They want to see competent city administration. But then they also want a bigger vision for Baltimore. They want to be that city that's kind of on the move, that they're excited by, that's proud, that's got big things happening, that's getting things done. And, you know, that's a different sort of dynamic that we need to bring to Baltimore.
What a great, great place to take a break. I'm going to see if we can ask Mary to spend one more segment with us. We know her schedule is jam-packed today. We are here at Fadley's. We got Jennings State Fair, Fadley Center, Maryland. Great sponsors.
They started the crab cakes, so this is
the
this
crab
is
cakes are
out.
Now going
I'll
again
be eating in the third segment.
If I remember correctly, elect Mary Miller.
.com.
electmarymiller.com.
Got it right here on my phone.
You got it on the phone. So we'll be back. Where are we, Nestor?
We are at Fadley's in Lexington Market. We are WNST.net and AM 1570 Baltimore Positive. Third segment with Mary Miller up next. Stay with us.